Next, we have Aaron Brooker from Ohio State talking about determining yield-limiting factors in Ohio soybean production. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for the introduction. Like you said, I'm Aaron Brooker. I'm a master's student at Ohio State, and I'm working on a project determining yield-limiting factors in soybean production in Ohio. So the objective of our study was to identify yield-limiting factors, like I said, through a three-year study of survey of farmers' fields using multivariate analysis. And to do this, we wanted to take it back to the basics approach. So we get questions a lot of the times from farmers about what we can add to soybean to increase yields, extra inputs. And we wanted to look at what is currently in the soil that is or currently in production that it's limiting yield. So these can include soil-related factors, cultural practices, pest pressure, and there's a lot more that I'll get into later in the presentation as well. So for our methods, we did conduct a survey of Ohio soybean fields from 2013 and 2014. Farmers throughout the state volunteered to participate in the project, and 138 fields were sampled in total between the 2 years. Three areas from each field were sampled. These included two normal yielding areas and one low yielding area. And this picture just shows kind of an example of what those sample areas might look like in a field. And these areas were based on farmers' past knowledge of yields. So these two maps just show the field locations throughout Ohio. You can see most of them are located in the western part of the state. That's because most of our production does occur in that area of the state. So for our methods, again, soil samples were collected in the spring about the time of planting, and these were 10 to 15 cores per sample, and they were analyzed for phosphorus, potassium, pH, buffer pH, cation exchange capacity, organic matter, and texture, which included the sand, silt, and clay content. And then the extra soil was also collected. Extra soil was collected from each area and included an SCN sample in that as well. And these points were GPS referenced, so we could get a map of the field like this and go back to those points multiple times throughout the year to continue with the project. And that would include things like tissue samples that were collected at R1, were collected from each area as well and analyzed for phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, copper, and manganese. And visual ratings for disease, insect, and weed pressure were also completed at R1. And these visual ratings were conducted again in late August. And these are just some of the examples of disease we might be looking for, like white mold, sudden death syndrome, and frog eye leaf spot that tend to be common throughout Ohio. So finally, we did collect yield with this. This was either done through weigh wagons from the farmers or from digital yield maps, which I analyzed. This is a picture of a yield map that I would get back. I would overlay the areas onto this and take out those sections and get the average yield from each section. And we would hope that that a field might look like this, where the two normal yielding areas were green, yellow, that higher yielding areas, and the low yielding area was in the red, orange, lower yielding, and that would hopefully we would be able to distinguish some differences that way. And finally, we did pass out a paper survey to all the farmers to determine their management practices. This included tillage, drainage, rotation, row spacing, and a lot of other factors. We wanted to really try to get everything we could from the farmers so we weren't leaving anything out. So for our data analysis, we used a linear mixed effects model, which was determined to determine factors that impacted yield. We did an initial model that included year, soil properties, including phosphorus and potassium, organic matter, pH, and texture. Soybean cyst nematode and management practices that included crop rotation, tillage, seeding rate, row spacing, and herbicide usage. We did run this initial model, and following that initial model, we looked at it. There were some confounding factors and stuff that we had to take out that skewed the normality of the model, and we came up with a final model that I'll get to in just a second. And because this was a survey, there are no controls or imposed treatments to compare against. So for this type of model, we picked variables to compare, or we picked selected baseline variables to compare the variables against. So we selected 2013 for the year, a rotation of corn and soybean, row spacing of 19.05 centimeters, tillage was no-till, pH of 6.0 to 6.8, which is the recommended range in the tri-state fertilizer recommendations, and a potassium level above the critical level, again, based on the tri-state fertilizer recommendations. So for our results, this is from the final model that included the factors that did not skew the normality of the initial model. So these factors included year 2014, a corn-soybean rotation, corn-soybean-wheat rotation, any other rotations that we had. We do have some continuous soybean, continuous corn, stuff like that. 38.1 centimeter row spacing, 76.2 centimeter row spacing, tillage, tilling corn, no tilling soybean, low potassium, high pH, low pH, and percent organic matter. And in this model, in this table, the factors highlighted in red were significant at 8.05, less than or equal to 0.05 significance. You can see that year 2014 yielded higher than 2013. Tillage and low potassium and high pH were all significant as well. And this graph just shows that again. On the y-axis, you see the yield change in megagrams per hectare and the variables that were significant. This is just to give you an idea, a better idea of the scope of the change that each of these variables had on yield. The 2014 caused a 0.67 megagram per hectare increase. Tillage caused a 0.42 megagram per hectare increase. Low potassium caused a 0.5 megagram per hectare decrease, and high pH caused a 0.48 megagram per hectare decrease. And again, these were just compared against the baseline values that we selected for this project. So our next question, we wanted to see if potassium, if there was any range in our soil fertility levels, any distribution throughout the state of these soil fertility levels. So the black circles here represent where all three samples were above the potassium critical level and would not require a potassium fertilization for that field. And the white circle represents that at least one sample was below the critical level and would require potassium fertilization. And as you can see here, there's not really any clear-cut distribution throughout the state. We didn't really gain a lot from that, but pH was kind of the same. Anything that was above 6.0 pH did not require a lime application, and anything below 6.0 pH would require a lime application based on the tri-state fertilizer recommendations. Again, you can see kind of that there's still not really a very good distribution here as well. There's kind of a lot of low pH in western Ohio, but still not a very good distribution. So the conclusions for tillage, one of our significant factors, we looked at some other studies and found that one meta-analysis showed that tillage for leguminous crops did not cause a yield increase, but for other crops it did over no-till. And another study found that following no-till for 3 years, if you tilled for 3 years, you could see a yield increase, but following that three-year period, you no longer get that yield increase. So we're wondering, you know, why does tillage increase yield, or why did it in this study? Tillage can also reduce disease by reducing the inoculum present to infect the soybean plants, so that could have something to do with it as well. We're not really sure. It needs to be looked into more. And basically, we want to know from this project, is there a way to integrate tillage and no-till into some kind of rotation? This could be pretty difficult to do, but something to look at. And there's also a bunch of new tillage implements and strategies that are starting to come out, and we want to know how these will impact yields over time. So these are a couple of things we need to look at. For pH, Our pH ranged from about 5.0 to 8.0. There were more high pH samples than low pH samples. And we know that high pH can cause the micronutrients mainly to become unavailable to plants if it gets too high. Low pH did not significantly affect yield again, but we think that the levels might not have been low enough to cause a significant yield decrease. And for potassium, we also know that soybeans require a very large amount of K or potassium, and we asked why was potassium significant but not phosphorus, and this is because of that large, we think it's because of the large potassium requirement, because there were low soil test values for each of these nutrients, so we think the effect of potassium may have just been greater than the effect of phosphorus. I would also like to point out, just because of the nature of this study, that it is a survey. We can't be conclusive about the effects of any one factor on soybean yield. More work has to be done replicated experiments would need to be done to determine the impacts of these factors. So for future work, we will be adding 2015 yield and sampling data, and hopefully we can strengthen these results with that. And we would also perform replicated experiments, like I said, with the factors that were significant. So potassium, tillage, and pH levels, we could look at those with replicated experiments and find out really better how these are affecting soybean yield. So with that, I would like to thank the Ohio Soybean Council for funding this project and everybody else who helped with data collection and everything else. So thank you for listening, and are there any questions?
Questions for Aaron?
Yes.
Can you try to differentiate between yields that are continuous no-till for several years versus those that may have occasionally been yield in the past?
So the question was if we tried to differentiate between fields that had been in continuous no-till versus those that had been tilled in the past, correct? We haven't looked extensively into that data yet with the survey. We probably do have some of that information, but it's just really going to depend on, since farmers volunteered for this survey, it's going to depend on who volunteered really to figure out if that's really going to have much of an impact. So the question was if pest management problems were relatively minor in this project. Unfortunately, with a lot of our visual ratings data, I had a lot of extension cooperators helping me with these samples. I did 70 fields on average a year. I only did 10 or so myself each year because there was just too much to do. So extension did help with this, and we unfortunately got some pretty inconsistent data back on the visual ratings. So we're hoping that 2015 data might strengthen that, but right now the data is just not very strong in that area.
One more question?
Yes.
Did you collect variety data, and if you did you look at that interaction with your different treatments?
So the question was if we collected variety data, and if we looked at that interaction with the results of the survey, I guess. So we do have the variety data in our surveys. We haven't teased any of that out yet. My guess with variety data is, since there's so many farmers throughout a really wide range of area in Ohio, the varieties are just going to be pretty dissimilar, I think. Across the state of Ohio, it might be difficult to find anything conclusive with that, I guess, just because there will be a lot of varieties planted. But it is something that we are going to look at as we get 2015 data in and continue to try to strengthen this data set. So.
Thank you.